Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to this edition of Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style, coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia. This is PPTS, presented as a service to the progressive community by the Coffee Party USA Radio Network. PPTS highlights the activities, activists, and activism of the progressive movement. Join our host and special guests as we discuss the most interesting and important topics of the day. If you have a cause, an issue, a campaign, or candidacy that you're actively engaged with, please feel free to give us a call at 646-929-2495 and share with us your question or comment. Join the show's co-host and producer, Progressive Patty, in our lively chat. Go to the bottom of this episode page, sign into the chat room, and let us know what you are doing about it. All opinions are welcome. For the Coffee Party USA and Progressive Politics Tennessee Style, welcome to today's show. Please make welcome our host and friend, the Tennessee Progressive.
Well, howdy, neighbor. Come on up. Sit on the porch a while. Coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia on this Sunday, January 26th, 2014. I am the Tennessee Progressive, and I'm joined with Progressive Patty and the rest of the team, and we're here to talk today about the State of the Union Address 2014. I'm glad to have you with us. You can give us a call at area code 646-929-2495 and let us know what you think the president should be talking about during his State of the Union address to the people of the nation this Tuesday evening. And I'm proud to have you with us today, and I'm proud to have you in our chat room today. Progressive Patty is helping us in the chat room today. She always moderates the chat room and talks with our listeners and our guests, and it's always a fun time, so I hope that you'll join with us there. And let us know what you think about what's going on. And the question that we're asking today is, if there's one thing you would like most to hear the president talk about today, what would it be? That's an important question, but what you may not know is that you have an opportunity to do something to make a difference there. I've got a link for you. I'm going to put it in the chat room right now. And if you go to it, you can get some instructions on how to still, even at this date, impact the State of the Union address for 2014. There's a lot of stuff going on, and there's a lot of electioneering going on as the 20 elections continue the circus environment. We're hearing a lot of stuff out of a lot of candidates. The ones that you're hearing the most about are the outrageous notions that are coming out of the Republican Party. pretty much decided Benghazi's not going to be anything. And they're really not much interested in talking about the Affordable Care Act, other than, you know, on the Sunday news shows this morning when people try to drill down to ask people like Jay Carney if the success of the Affordable Care Act is worth it if the Democrats lose control of the Senate. Which is not unlike asking if the Affordable Care Act is worth it if unicorns fart rainbows. But there's a lot of craziness coming out of the smaller, not less important, mind you, statewide elections and state representative House elections and stuff like that, where we get people arguing for the assassination of the President of the United States. People like Mike Huckabee talking about the problem with women is that they can't control their libidos. I'm not making this stuff up. It seems that the Republicans have come up with a plan to further create dysfunction in the American governance system by making abortion their issue for this election. I hope they do. There's a lot of things they could choose. This is a gift to the Democrats. This is a gift to the American people, and it shows that as the Republican Party continues its self-immolation, that they don't really care about the effects of what they say just as much as they can to raise the ire of their base. Which, by the way, is already pretty high. And people like Alan West. Oh, just anybody with a minute, Sarah Palin. Others coming in to talk about, you know, the dangers of the future and all that. Hillary Clinton and Elizabeth Warren and all those other liberal, progressive, socialist, communists that we have in office now, especially the women. It's amazing that the Republicans have decided to make women's issues their bedrock issue for 2014, considering there are more women in the United States Congress this year than there have ever been before. But there are a lot of issues that we've talked about over the last weeks. We're in the middle of a series of talking about the war on the poor, and we're concentrating on the 8 battlefields that we've identified as being primary battlefields in that war, one of which is, of course, the war on women. And the deal is that we've got to hear what's going on, and we've also got all kinds of manner of craziness going on concerning how this campaign is going to be funded, who's going to do the funding. I got a little bit to say about that later on in the show. It has to do with impeachment, but not of the president. Of course, there's plenty of talk about that going around, too, especially in the Republican conference. What you need to understand is that democracy is, in fact, no less under attack today than it was the last time we spoke. And the Coffee Party is an organization that believes in civility and trying to get people engaged and actively involved in doing what they believe is the right thing to do and what we believe is the right thing to do. We were funded and started because of basically Citizens United, but there were some other issues that got the Coffee Party started. Coffee Party Radio's trying in every way we know how to engage everyone from across the aisle to discuss issues that matter to the American people regarding the political life of our nation. And within that confine, that constraint, there's really no off-limit subject. The only thing we ask is that you call us. We have two rules. The first one is that you play nice and you remember that you're a guest in someone else's house. Second rule is that you come prepared. If you want to give us your opinion on something, put a big box around it, say it's your opinion, and then we'll let you go. Have at it. If you wish to present facts, come prepared. Be able to support your facts with reasonable reference links, things like that. We don't accept generally Wikipedia or townhall.com or a particular pointed reference from a political side like Red State or Daily Kos or things like that. But I'm a writer on the Daily Kos, and we have radio show hosts and other members of the coffee party that write there. So we'll get that out of the way. I don't know of any of our hosts that write on Red State or Town Hall. We do tend to be a progressive organization, progressively minded, in the 1935 view of progressives. And today's show is just a thought experiment, okay? You have the President of the United States sitting across from you at your kitchen table in your house, and there's one thing that you really want him to understand. You want him to understand it enough that you want him to address it positively for change in his State of the Union address 2014. What is that? What would you say to him? We'll give you time to talk. And if there is an issue, it needs to be one, that you want him to address, what is it? Call us at our phone lines at 646-929-2495. And we'll give you a chance to put it on the air and let all our listeners hear it. This show is rebroadcast on Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. Pacific time over on NetRich Radio. And, of course, it's always available for archive here at Coffee Party Radio. And you can also hear issues throughout the week. We'll be following the State of the Union address, both on NetRoots Radio Live and here on Tuesday evening. And if you'd like to have something to say about it, to interact, to make a difference in the State of the Union address, I'll give you that link one more time. Hello to our guests that are in the chat room. And if you go to that site, there are instructions there on what you can do direct to the White House today to impact the State of the Union address. They're carefully monitored, so I would not suggest spamming that site. They kind of take a dim view of that, and interesting things can happen if you do. But in the meantime, think about the State of the Union. I know that in the middle of everything that's going on in this world and all the craziness that's going on, it can be difficult to tear away from all that drama and seriously consider what you as an American citizen would want to hear from this president concerning the State of our Union and the plans for the next year. We do have elections this year. And, of course, the first thing I request of you is that you are both qualified and eligible, registered to vote in this election. You may be surprised to find out that you're neither, or not one or the other. You may be registered and not qualified. You may be qualified and not registered and not even know it because your voting history has been purged from the voting rolls where you live. This has been going on quite quietly since the 2012 elections. And you need to know that your vote is going to be available to you as a citizen across each of the 50 states and the territories of the United States that will be participating in the election cycle this year. And all you have to do is go to your local elections office, ask them two questions. Am I registered to vote? If you don't have a voter registration card that's current, ask for one. They'll give you one for free. And then find out if you're qualified to vote. And there may be some exemptions that you're not aware of that could potentially make it impossible for you to vote this year. But right now, we're looking at the large picture, and this is the time when we all become citizens. The president speaks to the nation. He speaks to every person in the nation. And we anticipate that this will be a highly visible event with a particular large share of America's population watching on Tuesday evening. I don't know what's up against it on the TV schedule, but I would imagine that if you will do your part and listen to it, it will be well worthwhile. I don't know that that's too much to ask of a citizen in a country that's not only of the status of our nation, but also with the problems and difficulties and challenges and opportunities that are before us as a nation now. It's important that you understand that you had the opportunity to particularly address the President of the United States before this speech. I hope that you will. We've been doing this a while now, and the Coffee Party has been working very hard to do a lot of things, not amongst the least of which is to address the insidious, most nefarious opinion of the Supreme Court in its history, as far as I'm concerned, and that being the history of its decision in Citizens United versus FEC. There are more of them. McCutcheon is before the court now, and we'll hear their results on that sometime before or in June, concerning whether or not there's an unlimited amount of money that doesn't have to be reported that can be donated to any country, any campaign in the country. And if McCutcheon is affirmed, then any semblance of secrecy to donations by large corporations or large donors will be gone. They won't even have to hide it anymore. We want to see Citizens United overturned. We want to see McCutcheon overturned. We want to see any challenge to the right of the citizen to have one voice, one vote, as opposed to a corporation who can vote millions of times or billions of times with their dollars. And we're going to talk about something real particular that has to do with impeachment of sitting members of Congress and bribery. Right now we've got our friend Jack on the line calling us from Oklahoma, and he's one of our most welcome special guests. So I want to bring him on the air now. Jack, are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you.
Hey, Jack, how are you doing, buddy?
Who am I speaking to?
This is the Tennessee Progressive.
Oh, okay. You mentioned Oklahoma. Well, I'm living in Oklahoma right now.
Yeah. That's why I mentioned it.
Yeah.
What's on your mind today?
What is, what's his name, Farben or what, Coburn.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been sort of going against the president anyway. Now, what I have in mind is, one thing to do is we the people are sick of this. I am personally sick of this. Called anonymity. They go what I'm trying to say is that under the guise of free speech and First Amendment, Second Amendment, you get this domination by the Koch brothers and I'm just not prepared right now. The Koch brothers and what's his name? God darn.
I'm with you, Jack. We'll give you all the time you need, buddy.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Koch brothers and,
You're talking about Alec?
Alec is another one, another organization, and,
State Policy Network?
Carl Rove. They somehow they got a curb. It's an education. Not exactly anonymity. But it's intimidation factor.
Yeah, where they can say...
Either or thinking. Either
right.
or black and white thinking is the cause. People don't even think of that. But what is, this nation is so screwed up.
Yeah, yeah, they do a pretty good job.
It's black and white or... either or, and that's got to be the education process, and that's the average person, and that's probably more predominant in so-called red states, and it's also very common in places like New York and Chicago, too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is there something you'd like to hear the president talk about?
Yeah, I'd like to hear him talk about what he's going to do about, he certainly mentioned jobs, how to create more jobs, or how to do away with all this money going to overseas. I think he's too much for these trade agreements, which are disadvantageous to the United States. Like what is happening with NAFTA, or you want to extend this to China? I mean to Japan and to the Indonesia and places like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think that that's
curb these things because they are disadvantageous to people in the United States. And they're not just a giveaway program. NAFTA and CAFTA and all that other equipment, yes.
What do you think about the Trans-Pacific Partnership? Have you had a chance to look at that yet?
That's specific. That'd be the same thing. Where are these nations of Indonesia and India and places like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they're disadvantageous to the United States as far as trade goes. And they're shipping jobs overseas. Oh, that is, that's the thing. Jobs are going to India. They're going to, maybe, yeah, China maybe. And
well, China's having a bit of a problem right now. China's having a bit of a problem right now. Their economy's slowing down at a very rapid rate. And I believe that, as you do, that the place for American corporations to make their money is in America. But, you know, they're trying so hard to convince us that we're no longer a unique nation, that we're just part of a global community, that they're trying to dilute our identity to the point where it won't matter. That's one of the things that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is pretty good at. And, of course, it's being negotiated in secret, so we really don't know what exactly it is that the United States stands to gain or lose, but we've seen some trial data that's come out of that that's pretty scary. It's got pretty much everybody upset. They're trying to fast-track it through Congress, and there's a bunch of people that don't want it fast-tracked. They want to take it to committee and read it and look at it and find out how we give up our sovereignty and what's going to happen to our people here concerning labor restrictions and safety laws and things like that. Because there's none of it in that. You know, they have to operate under international standards, which don't include those things that have been given to the workers of America by our unions, like safety and retirement and decent wages and collective bargaining and holiday pay and things like that that are so, you know, communistic. So what would you like the president to say in his State of the Union speech concerning jobs in America?
It should be a priority. I think that we should slow it down on shipping jobs overseas, particularly these oil companies. You got to also tax reform.
Tax reform.
You got to be okay. Let's say I get four brackets. Only four brackets. Yeah, graduated taxes, the maximum being 25% for those up to $500,000. Between $200,000 and $500,000, and you do away with the filing status. Only if necessary. Each one to follow taxes and the only exemption is the first $10,000 of income. And you don't report. And you go up to $20,000 on for seniors, people over 65.
Mm-hmm.
And I say you go graduate taxes, and I say you tax up to 50% for income over $1 billion a year.
Well, what about between, say, $250,000 and $1 million? What do you think they should be taxed at?
I would say when you go up to 30% for $500,000 to, $1 million. $1 million, you go up to $1 million to, say, $5 million, you go up to maybe 35%. And if you're up to $1 billion, be 35%, 40%, 45%. Percent. I haven't worked it out, but that's not going to hurt the rich people that much.
Well,
and
I don't think it's going to hurt.
The first thing you do is do, it'd be very simple. Do away with carried interest.
I see. Well, I think the tax, you know, there's plenty of Republicans that want to work on the tax code too, but they want to lower corporate taxes even more than they are now. Matter of fact, they'd like to eliminate corporate taxation. They got a little problem, though, with that, but I'd like to hear the president speak about that too, Jack. I think you're right. I think we need to talk about jobs in America. I think we need to talk about the dangers of the Trans-Pacific Partnership as it regards labor in America. I think we need to talk about tax reform.
Formed NAFTA, the existing one, NAFTA, and we have another one in South Korea.
Yeah. Well,
that advantage you to South Korea.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Jack, we've got other callers. I want to get them on. I'm going to put you on hold in case you. Thank you for calling us today, and I'll wait to listen. If you want to say anything else later on, just press the one key.
Yeah,
okay.
Right, we'll see. That's good.
Thank you, Jack.
I haven't heard you last week. I think you had a lot of music going on.
Yeah, we had some technical issues last week. We didn't get a lot of show in. Yeah. We're back, though.
Yeah.
Thanks, sir.
Okay.
Be well. Nice. Jack, a friend of this show and listener from Oklahoma, who says he'd like to hear President Obama talk about jobs, tax reform, maybe getting some equality in the process. One of our guests in the chat room is a friend of the show, Joseph, who wanted to talk a little bit, encourage people to look at the U.S. Department of Commerce site for a speech they had on the Trans-Pacific Partnership and its European counterpart this week. Said it talked about how it will help the U.S. economy, but sort of didn't say anything at all about the effects it would have on United States employment. He's concerned that the president is going to approve both the TPP and the TPIP. There was a report on CNBC concerning that. And the 1% versus the 99% is a picture that you can get in your head and understand. But what really we've got to talk about is the disparity, the income gap that keeps growing, where, you know, those who are at the top 1% of the nation receive 70% of the total income of the nation in a year, while 99% are left to fight for the remaining 30%. And we've got some tax issues that we have to deal with, one of which is $13.6 trillion corporations are sitting on in overseas bank accounts that comprise taxes that are legitimately owed the United States government. Now, while the Republicans are talking about us having a deficit and we're broke and all that, first of all, that's not true. That's a lie. But in the second place, they want to take the deficit to reduce the deficit on the backs of the 99% of the people who earn less than 30% of the income in this country, yet they'll do nothing to change the corporate status and loopholes that allow, or at least do not cause, aggressive criminal procedures against corporations that hide duly owed taxes offshore. I've got a big problem with that, and I've got a simple solution. I'd like to hear the president talk about that. American corporations are trying to coerce. I mean, the whole point of taking jobs overseas was, first of all, if you can get a man to work without any labor restrictions for 23 cents a day and not change the price of your goods, that's a pretty big profit increase. And, of course, the argument that they tell you is that the reason they need that is because they have to increase the profit bottom line for their shareholders. And I will say, as I have said since the beginning, that is a lie from the pits of hell. That's neither the purpose nor the procedure of a corporation in the United States of America. And it has nothing to do with their purpose of existence. That's not why corporations are licensed to exist in the United States of America, maybe other places. If you'd like to move your corporation to some other country after you pay the fees and dues that you're legitimately owing the United States government, we'll shutter your businesses for you. We don't have a problem with that. But the people of America are pretty sick to death of you talking about how you are being, you know, tied down. You're the job creators, and we owe you our existence. That's not going to work anymore, and you need to understand that, Mr. Corporate America. You're not a person, and money is not speech, and you don't have more than equal rights with anybody else. You've broken the social contract under which corporations have been allowed to exist in this country since before its founding. And we're going to do something about that. And we're going to take you to task for not being a corporate citizen and paying the taxes that the American Treasury and the American people are owed. If you want to talk about bottom line to your shareholders, there's one you could pay attention to. I'd like to see the Attorney General haul you into court for every single cent you owe the country and freeze your assets and take your benefits until you do. I'd like to see some of your board members in jail. That's what I'd like to see. If you're a banker in the United States of America, as far as I'm concerned, you need to come before the criminal courts and justify and show cause why you should not be thrown in jail just because you're a banker. Especially if you're a member of the top 10 banks in America. It's not that we particularly hate bankers, it's that we hate what you have been doing, and we're going to hold you accountable for it. The American people have a deep sense of justice, and that goes beyond political party or ideology or, you know, color of the spectrum. We expect our corporations to do what's right, and the corporation's first obligation is to do what's right for the citizens where it lives. So in this country, that's important. And we're going to start talking more and more about that during this election season. If you, you know, on the red side of the aisle want to talk about abortion, that's fine. We're going to talk about thievery and total disregard for American law. So, you know, you get to choose what you talk about, and we'll get to choose what we talk about. Yes, Joseph says that the basic belief by those folks who are in favor of the TPP is that, you know, by being part of the world economy, we can somehow dominate it. The Davos Conference, yeah. That's a fan of one of the members of the TV show Shark Tank is one of the biggest offenders of that whole notion. The Davos Conference is an important thing. I don't know that we can get much out of it, but these are folks who are they called multinational, and Joseph, I would say that they're non-national. They have no allegiance to any country. They're money grubbers. They're robber barons is what they are. They're just on an international scale, and they think that their only purpose is to accumulate wealth. What are you going to do with it? I mean, you know, basically, people over the centuries have been accumulating wealth for a reason. They've been accumulating wealth to reinvest in their companies to make their companies stronger, their employees stronger, with better retirements, for a better reason to work for that corporation, to make better products, to sell at a better price on a national or international market. One of the things that's terribly wrong with the United States that's causing the coming difficulty, as I see it, is that these corporations are sitting on trillions of dollars of cash because they don't know how to use it. They don't know what to do with it. They've got so much cash that they don't know what to do with it. And the difficulty is that if you're making so much money that your corporation doesn't know what to do with it, your corporation is imploding. That's the worst possible situation for any corporation in the world, to make so much cash that they can't spend it. And there are corporations in the world today that are doing that in the tens of trillions of dollars. And Joseph points out that DeVos Conference talks about 86 people controlling $110 trillion of the world's wealth. It's an interesting sight, but it's well, they attempt to buy politicians, and they do it in nefarious ways, Joseph. We're going to talk about that, especially in our second hour. I hope you'll stay with us, because we're going to talk about impeachment of those politicians. You know, one of the reasons that stands for a politician to be impeached in this country, considered as a high crime and misdemeanor, is the crime of bribery. And I'm going to spend some time talking about that. And I hope that there are some politicians out there who will call in and talk to us about why they shouldn't be, brought up in the House and the Senate on charges of bribery. It would be an interesting time of clearing the decks and rats leaving the ship, but nonetheless, I'd like you to listen to something, my beloved listeners, and then maybe you can tell me what you can do about it. First, we want to talk to Michael from Little Rock. Michael, are you with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
I apologize for making you wait so long. We had some technical things. Go ahead. Talk to me.
Oh, it's perfectly fine. I just wanted to call and ask you something. You said that, you mentioned it earlier when I first called in, I heard it. You said that you don't think that this company, or this country rather, is operating at a deficit. But it's a clear fact that this country has been operating at a deficit. Bush, and now into Obama, it's gotten even worse. And you look at Obamacare, and we're just adding to that deficit by spending more. So I want to know where you're coming up with the fact that we're not operating at a deficit, and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Michael. I appreciate it. The country is not operating at a deficit because the country is still taking in more money than it spends. And basically, if you got more gazentas than you got gazaltas, you don't have a deficit. The operation of that money is the question. It's not that we don't have it to spend, it's how do we spend it. Obamacare has cost the country nothing so far. Okay? And it's not Obamacare, it's the Affordable Care Act. I would tell you that if you talk specifically about the Affordable Care Act in terms of Obamacare, it's kind of difficult to take you with any sense of legitimacy. I do, but there are people that won't, because it's a trigger that's meant to have some other purpose than legitimate discussion. So I'll take you at your word that you want to have a legitimate discussion about it. The Affordable Care Act has cost the American people nothing. It's cost states that have engaged in the Medicare exchange program, extended Medicare and Medicaid to their citizens, nothing. The reduced cost in health care that has occurred because of the Affordable Care Act and the president, or the administration's rather, attack on health care costs to insurers, for instance, has reduced the cost of health care to the greatest degree since records have been kept. So even those who are not participating in the Medicare exchanges who have private insurance are paying lower rates and getting refunds. One of the problems that the healthcare industry had was that they had to offer $1.8 trillion, I think it was, total in refunds to their customers, because there was a new law put in place that said if 85% of your premium was not directly deposited to healthcare for that individual, it had to be refunded. So those monies have gone into other programs. Those are the savings that we talked about when Paul Ryan was talking about taking $780 billion out of the fund to, you know, populate other programs, he was talking about a withdrawal from the fund. What President Obama did was that he saved that amount of money from going into the fund by reducing the cost of health care and health care delivery and health care costs and premiums for the American people, which is why there was such a problem recently with what are called junk insurance programs, where people were buying junk insurance at a very high premium, and the companies were participating in a policy, not a program, but a policy of what's called underwriting at time of claim, which is an illegal activity, but it means that they didn't even look at your policy or your application for that policy until you filed a claim against it. And then their practice was to deny your claim no matter what it was. Because had they done their underwriting at the time you bought the policy several years ago, they would not have cleared you to do it because that policy didn't cover that. So they got you both ways, but in the meantime, they've been collecting your premiums. So it's important for us to understand that one of the things you're talking about is when you talk about a national deficit, you're talking about the difference between what we have coming in, and what we have going out. And the majority of the issue that we're dealing with is not that we don't have money coming in. We've certainly got less money coming in because the tax base has been constricted to the point of great difficulty because of jobs, you know. And anyway, we've got some callers I want to talk to. First of all, we'll talk to Brad. Brad, can you hear me?
I got you loud and clear.
Welcome to the show, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it, man. It's so refreshing to actually hear another voice of reason out here on blogtalkradio.com. I was telling the producer that we also host a show on here every Monday night at 8 o'clock with a progressive viewpoint. And, you know, we take a little heat from the conservative right side of the aisle quite a bit for trying to move the country forward. You know, what I want to hear from the president, excuse me, in the State of the Union address is how he's going to bypass Congress and use some executive decisions, because the problem that we've got here in this country is, like you were saying, you've got the 1% that is riding the backs of the hard work of the 99% of the American people, and then they're not giving back. We're talking about problems like minimum wage, and you talk about Obamacare. Talk about all the problems that are supposedly arising with Obamacare, but you go back and you look at what Medicare and Medicaid did when it was first introduced into the American culture. It had problems. And when a system is deemed by a group of people with political influence to be a problem and not what they want, because it creates a nanny state, supposedly, of course they're going to point out all the discrepancies within that program. And I don't really truly fully support Obamacare or Affordable Health Care Act in its form now, because I believe there's a better system that can be introduced. But in all honesty, there's got to be something. And you were talking about the debt situation. There's trillions of dollars being pumped over into wars that we necessarily don't have to have. And we could take that money back and start building up our own people.
Well, that's true, but, I mean, what would the military complex do then? I mean, we got a military-industrial complex that, you know, evidently surrounds the beating heart of the nation, and if they're not doing something, the beating heart of the nation would stop. I mean, ask any of them, they'll tell you.
Oh, absolutely. Well,
Radigan's rant the other day?
No, I did not. I've been actually so kind of consumed trying to get everything together for, you know, what we try to put out there that if it came from a conservative side, it just kind of goes out one ear and out the other, because it's all hot air to me anyway.
I'd like you to hear it. Would you mind?
I'd love to hear it.
Okay. Hang on just a minute. I'll bring you right back, okay? Hang on.
No problem.
Where'd it go? Let's see. I'll find it. Hang on a second, Michael. Patty, can you cue that up? I had it, then I lost it. Well, is it not on the board? Hang on a second, Michael. We're having a look here. Oh, he didn't take it out, surely. There it is. Here we go, Michael.
What would you like him to do?
I would like him to go to the people of the United States of America and say, people of the United States of America, your Congress is bought. Your Congress is incapable of making legislation on health care, banking, trade, or taxes, because if they do it, they will lose their political funding and they won't do it. But I'm the President of the United States, and I will have a country that is run by a bought Congress. So I'm not going to work with a bought Congress and try to be Mr. Big Guy. I'm working with the bought Congress. I'm going to abandon the bought Congress like Teddy Roosevelt did, and I'm going to go to the people of the United States and I'm going to say, you've got a bought Congress. And until we get rid of the bought Congress, which is Jimmy Williams' constant point, which is get the money out of politics, and until a president says that's the problem and says he's going to fix it, there is no policy that I can possibly see, no matter how brilliant your idea may be, or your idea, or my idea, or her idea, or your idea at home, is. That idea will not happen as long as there is the capacity to basically fire a politician who disagrees with me by taking funding away from him. Is that a fair assessment?
Money in politics is the root of all political evil. It is corruption at its worst. And until we step up and kick that out of the park, it's going to be the same system all
the time. And only the president could do that.
What do you think, Brad? Do you think that makes sense, Michael?
Michael's a buddy of mine. This is actually Brad.
Hi, Brad.
It makes absolute sense to me. If you look at what you go back, let's go back to the government shutdown, and let's look at the powers behind the Tea Party, because we all know that in, 2011, 2012, it came out that the Koch brothers were pumping money into the Tea Party through various organizations and whatnot. And a part of that whole filibuster where our beloved Ted Cruz decided to get up and read Green Eggs and Ham on the floor came out. Basically, they were trying to pass that Keystone Pipeline legislation to avoid the shutdown, which, to me, Congress has bought. And I mean, I can't knock what the guys say. I'm sick and tired of this fascist country that we live in, where everything is corporation controlled. You look at the school shootings, you look at the mall shootings in Maryland that has happened here recently, and you look at everything else, you're talking about a country that is driven by the almighty dollar. And, I know by saying that I'm going to be viewed as a socialist and this, that, and the other, but, I want somebody to explain to me that if capitalism and things like that are the answer, then obviously over the past 40 years since Reagan started deregulizing everything, how do we make capitalism better, and how do we get money out of Congress? I don't agree with Mike Huckabee at all, and he was my governor for years. But the thing about Huckabee that I do agree with is term limits. You talked about impeachment and things of that nature. But what I do is really try to advocate for term limits for Congress and for the Senate and everybody else up there, because right now it's whatever the big corporation of the day suggest. I mean, politics is basically NASCAR.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun? I love that comment that was made, that if we made the members of Congress wear uniforms like the drivers in NASCAR with all their sponsors on them, we'd have a lot clearer understanding of what's going on.
I mean, it's absolutely true, though. You look at, they talk about gun control and
And I carry a concealed weapons license, being in the state of Arkansas down here in the South, I know. And I don't think that we need to pass more gun control legislation, but I do believe that we need to quit, instead of going, okay, you know, you have a mental problem or you have a defect, here, have some pills, you know, because these pills are not good. And the mental health in this country is not good. The health care system in this country is not good. And I posted on my Facebook page not too long ago a little meme about that kind of broke down the perspective of the minimum wage in all three kind of, you know, income classes. And you're talking about when gas is $3.34 on the average, that it takes an average American worker making minimum wage almost 30 minutes to work to earn a gallon of gas.
Yeah, to take home
and
a gallon of gas.
Yeah, and they want to know why we have a high crime rate, we have this, that, and the other. It's because we are not being valued as American citizens. All we're valued as is what we can earn for the top 1%. I agree. I mean, that's what I believe.
The question is, I believe, if we look at things that you discuss rightly from the viewpoint of citizen, do you think that would change anybody's opinion?
I mean, I don't. I mean, in a perfect world, it should, but I don't know if it would.
Well, let me ask you another question based upon your first statement regarding ACA. Okay, you don't agree with everything because you believe that there's a better system available. I agree with you on that. My question to you is, which way do you think we're closer to that better system, with ACA or without it?
Well, obviously with ACA. The fact
you think
that
has anything to do? Do you think that has anything to do with the opposition against it?
I don't understand that question fully.
Okay, if you believe that the system that you would like to see is a step closer with ACA, do you believe, can you see any reason to believe that the level of opposition against ACA is specifically because of that better system? I presume you're referring to single payer. I mean, we're closer to a national health insurance or a single-payer health insurance with ACA, I would submit, than if it were to be repealed. Because it's the repeal of ACA that makes a single-payer system impossible. But ACA makes a single-payer system very possible. And as
seeing, you're right.
You know, 8 million people getting involved in the ACA, 3 million confirmed sign-up premium paid holders in the last 30 days, there's an awful lot of people out there who believe that they deserve the right to have affordable, reasonable health insurance too. That's in direct opposition to the belief of those who are in the, say, top 10%.
Well, and you know, you get the question that I would ask is the opposition to ACA. It is my understanding that the ACA was modeled, or as they would like to call it, Obamacare, whichever. They still call them Obama phones, even though Reagan initiated that act in 1985 with the Lifeline Act. So we know how that spin goes.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, what I want to know is that why is the conservative movement in America so opposed to the ACA, yet their poster child for the presidential election in 2012 used the same health care system in his own state?
More liberal than the one we have. Well, the fact, you know, it came out of Heritage Foundation position papers to start with, and the opposition is not necessarily by the red team. I think that they're paid speakers for the opposition, but the opposition is the healthcare industry itself. And
you're right.
If you go to a single payer system, you basically eliminate private health care. Now, 9.5% of the people in America have private health care, which means that 91.2% of the people don't. So,
and I mean, I'm one of those fortunate ones. I'm one of the fortunate ones that has provided health care through my job.
And I do. I'm thankful for that. And so far, I've never had to use it. But the thing about it is that, you know, I've watched documentaries after documentaries, and one of the better ones was Sicko. Now, I'm not trying to promote anybody's ideas or opinions other than my own, but, you know, I would encourage anyone listening to the program to check that documentary out. The thing about it is I think, you know, you're talking about corporation-controlled agendas, and I honestly believe that the healthcare industry as a whole has its hands so deep-rooted into this ACA opposition because they feel like they're not going to make the profit or the money because these doctors are prescribing phony diagnosis so that they can push pills, they can push practices, and they can fatten their own pocket. And it's very sickening, the fact that as we live in an American society where healthcare is not free. And I don't have a problem with privatized healthcare. I believe there's a system that can work itself out to where you could have both.
Yeah.
I really honestly do. But the problem is that when you start talking about free and you start talking about this, that, and the other, then everybody wants to throw out entitlements and nanny states and everything like that.
Those are just words. You know, anything that we call
a lot.
Anything that we call an entitlement, automatically you go to look at it and you find out that it's already been prepaid by the people who would be effectively using it. That sort of kills that argument. Now, the trouble is that if you spout a lie long enough, you know, It's the simple fact that the functional operational agenda of the conservatives, the ultra-conservative fundamental evangelicals, and the Tea Party terrorists in this nation have decided they're going to throw it out there and make us walk it back. And we're going to have to expend our funds, our time, our resources, our energy, our treasure to show them to be the liars they are. Meanwhile, the government does nothing. I go back to what one person said, a single individual citizen of this nation who said it is our goal to reduce the size of government to a size where we can drag it into the bathroom. And then he said, and drown it in a bathtub. This is not reduced government, okay? This is not reduced government. This is removal of government. That is their goal. Why? Because they are in favor of a corporatist plutocratic theocracy. They're not interested in democracy. They don't want democracy. If you look at the number of amendments that several of their members have indicated they would like to remove from the Constitution immediately, you see that they've selected it to the point where if they do in fact do that, the Constitution becomes null and void, which is what they want.
Well, absolutely. I mean,
they
why would want you
want
anything that goes against
rights.
Your? Yeah, I mean, why would you want to get rid of anything that benefits you? That's the mentality that,
right.
that the control of this country has, and
the people,
you know, man,
that are in office. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, man, I really enjoy your show, and I'm going to have to jump out of here. And if there's any
way
I can talk with the lady that I was speaking with before, man, I'd love to have you on our show at some point in time and kind of discuss some things with you, because it's really nice to hear a refreshing voice over the...
I will do that anytime. I have no problem with that at all. Would you put a link to your show in our chat room?
I will definitely do that, man, and I appreciate your information.
Okay.
And so I'll put the link up there, and we do it every Monday night at 8 p.m., so just,
that's,
you know,
great.
I'd love to have you on sometime, brother.
I'll put you back in contact with our producer right now. And thank you for calling.
Okay.
Feel free to call anytime.
No
All
problem,
right?
man. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Uh-huh. Well, how about that? You see, the fact is that we have reason to believe that we are not alone. When you look around and you think, how crazy can it get? And why is it so crazy now? The answer is because the voices that are being heard are being paid for by others. These are not people who actually hold these views. These are people who have accepted the cost of promoting their agenda through innocence. And my statement has always been, if you stop being a political ideologue, and you come down to the responsibility that you first have is to be a citizen of this nation, then you have the opportunity to make a difference. You can become the change you seek. Every citizen of this nation, regardless of their gender, regardless of the fact that women are not recognized as equals as citizens under the Constitution, that needs to change right now. If you understand that it is not because of your race that makes you a Democrat, if you understand that it is not your sexual orientation which makes you a Democrat or a Republican, it is not a matter of your faith which makes, you know, the thing that most often irks me in this world is the fact that there's this general view out there in the decent portion of this country that if you're a Democrat, you have no faith. I don't know where that came from, but I watched people, about 52% of a 6,000-member congregation, walk out of church one Sunday when that is exactly what their pastor said. If you vote for this Democrat, you're a heathen and you're going straight to hell. I happen to be, you know, working for the legislature of Colorado, visiting this church for the first time when this guy said that, and he said it to an audience not knowing that the man he was referring to was sitting beside me. And I got up and walked out with this man, and coming out the top of the door, the preacher yelled, he said, "Brother, have I offended thee?" And I said, "It's not me you need to worry about offending." But as for, you know, what you've said, it would seem to me that given the political makeup, the voting representation of the people of Colorado, you probably offended about one out of every two of your congregation members. I won't stand and listen for this heresy. What are you doing speaking of this from the pulpit in the first place? And by the time I got to my car with my friend, a couple of people came up and shook my hand and thanked me for saying it. And I turned around and I said, "Is church out?" And he said, "No, half the people walked out of the church when you did." Did it have to do with anything political? No. There are people of faith across every political stripe that you have, and they're not all, you know, ultra-conservative evangelical fundamentalists. There are people who have the right to faith because this country is based upon the notion that we have the right to practice our religion or to be protected from others seeming to feel the need to practice their religion on us as part of our Constitution. That's a problem for a lot of people. They really want that out of there. And it's been going on for a long time, long time. We've become used to hearing it. We don't need to be used to hearing it. We need to deny it wherever we find it. When somebody says to you, "If you believe this, then you're a, well, I'm an American. That's what I am. I'm an American citizen." I would like us to reestablish that clause in the Constitution. I would like to make sure that regardless of race, national origin, ethnicity, gender, sexual identity, you know, the same things that we protect people from being discriminated against when they rent an apartment are protections that are afforded us because we're citizens of the United States. How does this president work with an obviously, arrogantly determined to do nothing Congress? He bypasses this Congress because of his power as executive, and he requires the Congress to do the work the American people send him to do. That's what he does. We have the ability to remove such people that tell us that it's in our best interest for them to know what's going on, for us to shut up and live with it and suffer under the same wages that we received in 1960, while those at the very top of the income scale see their income go up 327% last year. It's not that we want their wealth. I don't want anybody to hand over their money to me. I think that if you have the opportunity and the blessing of receiving wealth, creating wealth, generating wealth, sharing wealth, you have every right to that. Newsflash, so do I. It is most likely that a generation of children born today in poverty will die in poverty. This is a fact. This is because of the increasing stretch of the rubber band between the Ubers and the filthies, as a friend of mine says, and everybody else. That includes the bottom 90th percentile of the American citizen. They say that they have more of a right to speak, to do, to act, to be considered than we do because of their wealth. I disagree with that. I don't think wealth has a thing to do with it. I don't. Because they provide income. They don't provide income. If they're providing income, where is it? How come it is that in 1960, a man was making or a woman was making X number of dollars, that's within 2% of what they're making today? And just to give you 5 minutes worth of why this is happening, it's real simple. The final third position of wealth creation in this country was destroyed in late 2007. And for those of us who were working after the war, when we tried to keep up with the level of life living that we had worked for after the war, we maxed out our potential. And so we had to bring some thing into the mix of our own kitchen table economies that would allow us to continue to live where we live, to have our kids with the things that they needed. And women went into the workforce, and all of a sudden our families certainly were determined by two incomes instead of one. And I worked for a while. Then it got tighter. And as a result of that, we needed to create something or find something that would allow us to continue the lifestyle that we had earned and chosen for ourselves, some of us unwisely, but that's okay. All of a sudden, credit became this wonderful thing. How much did it cost? Nothing. I put it on a credit card. That was the second recovery. And then didn't work anymore because we were swimming in debt up to our nose. We needed a release that would allow us to continue our lives as we had, you know, worked to earn them. We didn't even realize that we were doing it on the backs of an industry that was going away from us faster than they were coming to us. Here came equity loans. And all of a sudden, our wealth was concentrated in our homes. We pulled it all together into one easy payment. And spending went up, prices went up, cost of education went up, cost of gasoline went up, cost of lights went up, cost of gas went up, cost of heating oil went up. Because, you know, so many more people were suddenly homeowners. They were never homeowners. They were co-lenders with a bank of ever-increasing dubious reputation. And in 2007, that bubble popped. And when that bubble popped, you know, the assumption was that it was going to affect the lower class, the poor and the working poor. Well, they had already been scorched out of the economy. George Bush made it his first point of business to eliminate the middle class in American society the day he took office. There were two plans that he had activated prior to his election. First was Iraq. The second was the elimination of the middle class. He very nearly accomplished both, and then the economy did for him what he couldn't do himself. But the thought that it was going to affect the lower class, the blue-collar class, the poor, and the working poor was a ridiculous notion because we were already out of the picture. When the debt bubble burst in 2007, the first people hit were the middle class. I submit that was by previous design. And on his way out of the White House, he stopped by the Treasury, took as much as his pockets would hold, and left, said, thanks, you're on your own, good night. And said, now, let's see him fix this one. But it affected the middle class and the upper class first. And all of a sudden, the people who were homeless were not the working poor. They were the people who had six-figure houses and six-figure incomes. And all of a sudden, the middle class was struggling for jobs, competing with those who hadn't finished high school to flip burgers at McDonald's for minimum wage. Pressed an entire class of people into the bottom. Expanding the wealth and income disparity between the top 1% and the bottom 90%. They don't have a right to health care. They don't have a right to free enterprise. They don't have a right to make their own future. They don't have it. Well, only we do. Why? Because we say so. We have people who we can pay to make it so. And if we can make it so, we should. Why? Because we can. Not because it's right. And all of a sudden, they just distorted everything about we and who we were and what we know and what we do and how we do it and why we exist to their own purposes. Why? Because they could afford to do it. Because all of a sudden, they had money they couldn't spend. The stock market, hey, listen, if you're talking about the health of a nation and you want to look at Wall Street, go ahead. It's great. Wall Street's seeing never-before-seen profits. Cost of 99% of the population of this country. But, hey, we're fine, thanks. We got so much cash, we can't figure out where to spend it. We got taxes that are owed the United States government. It's never going to see. You want to talk about how to destroy a deficit? Collect the taxes. I'd like to hear the president talk about that in his State of the Union speech. I'd like him to talk about how he's going to become an effective president with an ineffective Congress. I'd really like to hear that. And we're going to take a short break. And then we're going to come back for the last part of the show. And I appreciate our chatters chatting with us today. I appreciate our friends that are in the chat room. And I want you to understand that there's a group of people out here who are working real hard on doing that, okay? So try real hard. Hang in there with us. And yeah, Joseph, the Dan Erickson show is at the same time. But remember that all shows are archived. You can hear them both. And that's not a problem. That's not a problem. We need to hear a varied source, a varied resource, and as many voices as we can as we begin this cycle, because this is going to continue through 2016. Don't lose focus. While you're looking at your network where you live, the courthouse and the White House, that's the trend. We've got Democrat contenders in every major race already in Tennessee from now through 2016. Both U.S. senators are under severe campaign right now from, in Tennessee anyway, from committed, dedicated, and reasonable contenders for the Democrats. So we're hoping that the majority of citizens of Tennessee will get behind these people for change that they can see and believe in. Don't know that it'll happen, but it could. We're going to work real hard, and that's the hard part. Once you get to the point of having somebody to stand up against these yahoos, you got to work real hard to get them elected, because it's hard getting elected. It really is. And we believe that they should be elected. We also believe that Mr. Corker and Mr. Alexander need to come home, because they're completely out of touch. We've got people, you know, I look around the internet and I see the stuff going on, and I know that it's insanity in the first order. So we'll take this short break and we'll be back to talk about the State of the Union speech and what you can do about it and why you should be doing it. Stay with us. This is Progressive Politics Tennessee Style.
Hello everyone, this is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. There are many arguments proclaiming the evils of big government, and it always seems to come back to the same arguments made by the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists during the days of our founders, concerning the differences between a strong central government and a weak central government. The Second Continental College adopted the Articles of Confederation on November 15, 1777. And it was in place until 1789, but it was replaced by the Constitution, which advocated for a stronger central government. Why was it replaced? The Articles of Confederation maintained the principle that the national government would not hold more power than the states, that which they saw as sovereign. This satisfied the fears that many of the states had regarding a strong central power, as Britain was before the Declaration of Independence. In fact, there was no executive branch, because they feared giving one man that much power, and it was decided that the Congress would handle all the nation's affairs. However, there were many inherent weaknesses with the Articles of Confederation. The national government did not have the power to tax. Congress did not have the power to force states to obey its laws. Congress could not enforce laws. Each state could issue its own paper money. Any state could put tariffs on trade between other states or countries. There was no system of national courts. Congress could declare war and raise an army, but it could not force the states to give men or money. After the Revolutionary War, the country went into a deep post-war depression. The states were threatening war with each other, and there were armed uprisings and riots across the land. Things eventually got so bad that the country was on the verge of a civil war. This was called the critical period. Because each state was printing their own money, the value depreciated soon after the war, and many returning soldiers were paid in currency they considered to be worthless. There are stories that some soldiers wallpapered their house with the paper currency. On May 25, 1787, the Continental Congress convened in Philadelphia to decide the fate of the Articles of Confederation, and on September 17, 1787, a new constitution was approved, which had the much-needed stronger central powers. Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA Blog Talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone.
Blue. side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you fellow workers until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Sing it!
Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, workers, can you stand it? Tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab, or will you be a man? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell. Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Hi, this is Dan Aronson, host of Coffee Party Radio's Press One for Democracy. Did you know that there's an entire lineup of Coffee Party Radio shows? We at P1FD kick off each broadcast week Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Thursdays, our executive director, Janine Loudon, hosts Lunch with Loudon, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Saturdays, Egberto Willis hosts Politics Done Right, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the latest addition to our Coffee Party Radio family joins us every Sunday at 4 p.m. It's Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style, with your host, Bud Fields. And remember, unlike our current federal government, Coffee Party Radio is of the people, by the people, and for the people. Each show, you'll have the chance to call in at area code 646-929-2495 so you can stand up and be heard. When you can't make it with us live, remember that all of our shows are available to you 24/7 in our online archives. So again, this is Dan Aronson on behalf of all Coffee Party Radio hosts and our entire membership saying thanks for joining us to discuss the issues of the day the Coffee Party way.
Welcome back to Progressive Politics Tennessee Style. I am the Tennessee Progressive, and I'm joined in the studio today with our team and headed up by Progressive Patty, who is talking and managing our chat room today. It's a lively chat with a lot of guests, and we want you to join us. If you go to the bottom of the show page today, you'll see our chat room, and you can feel free to join in live. You can also call us at area code 646-929-2495 and tell us what you'd like the president to talk about in his State of the Union address. If you would like to know, we have links in the chat room today for how you can participate in the State of the Union address and help create it before it goes live. We have a link to the WhiteHouse.gov site that will allow you to do that. And it'll be interesting because this show will replay on Thursday beginning at 9 p.m. Pacific time at netrootsradio.com. And it'll be interesting to see if what you would like to hear was in fact what you heard. If you had any direct input, and I know that you can have, I don't know that you will have, but that's up to you. The State of the Union is an annual report of the state of the country, of our nation, from our chief executive to the people, our commander-in-chief and our president. And we'll also lay out his plans for his administration for the coming year. And there's a lot of things that people believe the administration should do, should be doing, that it's not doing, doing things that it shouldn't be doing. So it stands to be a lively conversation. You need to know that there will be two responses to the president's address, one from the Republican Party, and for reasons I don't completely understand, Senator Mike Lee from Utah will respond for the Tea Party. I guess the Republicans just can't get their act together enough to have one voice, so we'll see. This is a relatively new situation regarding the multiple responses that I hope dies an early death. The seeming legitimacy of a third party is one thing. The legitimacy of this third party is something else again. So while it would seem that most sincere progressives have a lot to agree with the Tea Party, it very quickly becomes apparent that we don't because of the outcomes expected. We expect governance in this country in a two-party system to work. They don't want it to work. They want it to go away. When you're dealing with 350 million citizens, the government has a decided role that it needs to play other than the military role and the taxation role. And as citizens, we need to understand that we depend on the federal government for those things which we as states cannot provide for our citizens alone. And that's one of the reasons that we have a federal government. The question is, what are the things that government should provide? We have as long established that there are certain requirements and expectations of our federal government to help us as a nation move forward. And sometimes we have various and sundry disagreements about that. But in the end, as long as the goal has always been to move the nation forward, most people on both sides of the aisle have been willing to compromise a little bit, not a lot, just a little bit, to get what we can to move forward to fight another day for those things that we can't get today. We believe that one of those things is single-payer health insurance, and we had a lively chat with friends about that earlier in the show, and if you missed it, I hope you'll listen to the archive because it was worth listening to. Thanks to Brad and the group from 49, and stay tuned to the Coffee Party Network because there's a lot of talk going to happen about what the Coffee Party intends for itself this coming year. And we have an agenda that we're proud of, so we're not afraid to talk about it. You can listen to our shows on Monday and Thursday and Saturday and this show to get involved in the process as a citizen. That's really what we want. We want civility. We want to be able to dialogue back and forth together to find out areas not where we disagree, but areas where we can agree. And we believe that as citizens, we have the right to do that because we have something that no one can take away, and that is our voice. We let our voice be known at the ballot box, but we also let our voice be known together. And that's what we're most interested in. And if you would like to have some say, or have the opportunity to have some say in the State of the Union speech for 2014, I encourage you to do that. Last week, I encouraged you to write letters to the White House and to speak personally to the president. Someone said that would take too long. Not true, but that's okay. Suggested postcards, that's okay. I don't recommend emails, but there's a lot of talk going on around the blogosphere and the internet about things that should be happening, and there's a lot of confusion and chatter, we call it, where people are more busy bad-mouthing other people than creating positive solutions. But we believe that positive solutions are important, and that's what we want to highlight and deal with on this show and on this network. This is the Coffee Party Radio Network, and you're listening on Blog Talk Radio. So the State of the Union speech is going to be on Tuesday evening, and it's going to deal with a lot of the things that this country is trying to address. We're going to talk about things like $4 trillion in deficit reduction. We're going to talk about jobs, losses, and gains in President Obama's administration, among other things. We're going to talk, the president will talk for us about these issues and others. And there's all kinds of ways that you can take part, including new ways to share graphics from the enhanced State of the Union speech. And then right after the address, senior advisor to the president will take your questions live. You can post your questions on Twitter, Vine, Instagram, Google+, Facebook, using the hashtags SOTU and SOTU chat. So you're invited to get involved in that. You can find out what's going on today, right now, with the State of the Union address at the site that I gave you. And there are some folks that are going to be special invited guests to join the First Lady in the viewing box. Teachers and innovators, business leaders and service members, not among the least of which knowing that Valerie Jarrett and Dr. Joe Biden will be joining the First Lady, of course. But there are others who will be announced as we get closer to the State of the Union address. We have, on January 29th, the White House officials are going to take to social media for a day-long open house to answer your questions about anything in what is being known as the Big Block of Cheese Day on January 29th. The story for that comes from President Andrew Jackson, who in 1837 hosted an open house featuring a 1,400-pound block of cheese and on January 29th, with a nod to that history and maybe the TV show The West Wing. White House officials are going to be around on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, and Tumblr, to respond to any questions you may have as a result of the President's State of the Union address. So getting involved today is a possibility of continuing through next week. And not only can you hear the watch the speech on the State of the Union portion of the WhiteHouse.gov site, but you can too. And all you have to do is enter a valid email site. And you can hear me doing that now. I've already done it, but I'll do it again. And say that you're in, that you want to participate in that process. And they will be talking about getting ready and participating and how you can participate and what you should be able to do. And of course, the day of, before the speech, White House officials can take you behind the scenes through the White House Instagram, and you can follow Pete Souza, the president's official photographer, his speechwriters, and his senior advisors at #InsideSOTU. So you've got three opportunities to participate directly in the State of the Union address. And as a citizen, I think you should. I encourage you to do so. And all of these things are available to you through this administration. I don't know that they'll continue with other administrations because this president has really found a connection with the people of America through social media. The WhiteHouse.gov site is a clearinghouse for all that. And we found that the web is actually a pretty good place to talk about and deal with things that are of issue to this nation. And there are many of them. As the ACA rolls out and millions of Americans are now on board and many more millions working through the process, it's going to be important for Democrats in this election cycle to highlight the fact that this president has, and his administration and his party, have worked very hard to bring affordable health care to all Americans. The job's not done yet. There are still those who do not have health insurance. There are many who have been the victim of junk insurance that are finding themselves in a bit of a quandary that they can get actual help from the healthcare.gov site for that. Again, social media playing a role. We believe that internet radio is, of course, the wave of the future for radio, and that Coffee Party stands to do what it can to help you become active in creating the change you seek by being the change you seek. And there's an awful lot of opportunities available to do that. I serve as the national team member for the support team for MoveOn.org, and we see petitions, activities, meetings, neighborhood meetings, house meetings going on all across the nation. MoveToAmend.org is another one. And there are the same things going on there. We have electoral campaigns beginning from federal Senate races to local state house races to local city races to local community races that are ongoing right now. So not only are you allowed to participate, you're urged and needed to participate to make democracy work. That's what we're about, and that's what this show tries to bring to you from a progressive viewpoint, to be sure, but we always do it from the viewpoint of citizen. And it's kind of difficult on one hand because in order to be fair about it, we've got to keep our research team busy working on issues across both sides of the aisle so that we can understand and speak knowledgeably of what the others have. And we try to correct error when we see it, as with Michael today, who honestly believes that we are, that the United States government cannot afford to operate. While that is not true, it is also necessary to also speak to the fact that our tax base has been significantly reduced thanks to the virtual elimination of the middle class. And if you try to keep taxation at a rate of the middle class, but you're getting it from those who are the least among us, who either do not work or cannot work for find a job for minimum wage, one of the things you understand is that the biggest shortage in America today is of meaningful jobs. From right-to-work states that have taken away the idea of a meaningful job to elimination of everything from wage benefits and work benefits to the elimination of the minimum income and minimum wage and things like that so that it becomes a competitive environment for who's willing to work for the least. While at the same time, there are those who would like to increase the tax rate on those folks who are earning less than the minimum wage. It becomes a quandary. You know, you can't go both ways. The rubber band continues to stretch. And there are two things that Dr. Robert Wright says that can happen to the rubber band. It will either snap back and we will somehow come to an understanding of coming back toward the middle of sharing with each other, or it will snap break. And if it snap breaks, then the days that are ahead of us are significantly worse than the days we've seen. There's been a question about why it is that I talk in the way I do, in the terms that I do, and you often hear what could be loosely considered to be patriotic music on this program. There was a time in this country when we could not agree. And it became a time when there was such a level of disagreement that we went to war against ourselves. And as he was coming into office, that was the situation that was facing the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, who said that his only goal was the preservation of the Union. He did not fire in hostility until he ordered his troops, the federal troops, not to fire unless they were fired upon. And of course, South Carolina did that for us with their assault on Fort McHenry. And Fort McHenry had been the site of the onset of another war. Fort McHenry was where the War of 1812 began. And it's a little-known war, but it was a war that pitted the United States against Britain and against Canada and against the native First Nation folks of this country, who decided that they were unwilling or unsecure in supporting the American administration. So they sided with the British and the Canadians and paid a dear, costly price for that that has changed there forever as well. Given the situation at the time, I think that there was plenty of reason for them to doubt the best intentions of the United States government, a young government, who spoke good words but didn't seem to have the ability to carry out its words in the talk versus the walk scenario. And even during the Civil War, there were many things which affected the cause and the outcome of that war. Slavery was one of those things. Economic reality was another. International relations was another. The expansion of the United States was another. But the president, given all of those things, said there is but one job, and that is to preserve the Union. He said, if by eliminating slavery I could save the Union, I would do it. If in order to save the Union I could make slavery the law of the land, I would do it. His purpose was to preserve the Union. There is no right to secede from the United States of America in our Constitution. It is an illegal act. And as we hear from those who would, you know, vocalize their wish that we, in our state, whatever that state is, secede from the Union, one of the things I would remind you is that is an illegal act, and you're advocating an act that would necessarily result in war against ourselves. Of course, there are those who believe that that's probably the best thing that would happen anyway. I've heard everything from they should have let the South secede to kill all Democrats this week. So I will tell you that in the realities of life, the life of this nation hangs in the balance, just as it did in 1859 or 1856 or 1858 or 1861 or 1863. We have got to make sure that the rubber band snaps back to the middle, that we generate equality, economic equality, racial equality, justice equality, environmental equality in this country. We are a nation capable of doing this among few nations in the world. And it is our best interest as a nation. It is our imperative under our Constitution. It is our necessary action as a people to be citizen again and to withhold our tongues from such idle jabber in the interest of the preservation of our nation, our way of life, our economy, our people. And when you hear someone talking about anything else, you need to understand that while they may truly have those beliefs in their heart, they may not understand exactly what it is they're advocating for. Which is why when we look at this Congress, it's already decided it's going to do nothing again. You may understand the necessity of our president to act in the interest of the American people. Of course, he does that under the suffering peril of impeachment. That's nothing new. However, the question is, when you're all by yourself and nobody's watching except you looking at yourself in the mirror, can you be a citizen? Can you understand that it is not untoward for people of this nation to have disagreement, but that we never resolve to gunplay, to violence, because we think we're right, until and unless we all agree as a people that that is the only course left to us? It's been a long time since we did that. It is not in the arc of history for us to battle each other to death every once in a while. It is not in the best interest of this union for us to dissolve the union. It is not in the best interest for us as a union to dissolve our Constitution and allow others, for the purpose of profit, to take it over. In the 1820s, we had a situation where that began, and it went right up until the 1920s. Interestingly enough, in the year 1928 was when the United States saw the peak of its largest economic boom. And of course, then came 1929. Again, in 2006 and in 2007, this nation saw the historic economic boom. This didn't happen because it had to. There was no historical precedent for causing this to happen. It happened because of greed. It happened because of avarice. It happened because of hubris. And the difficulties we're finding in our nation today are precisely for the same reason. I would like to hear the president talk about what the responsibility of citizen is. Understand that he's only before the Congress. He's not talking to Congress. He's talking to you. He's talking to me. And his plan for his administration and the things that he believes he can accomplish in this coming year, we need to support, even if we disagree, just so we can remember how it's done. There are those who genuinely believe that whatever this president offers in the way of plans is detrimental to the United States, but I would ask them to consider the source. I would ask them to consider the basis upon which they make that determination and to determine for themselves whether or not it is true. And we're going to be going a little long today on today's show to give you the opportunity to chime in and let us know what you think. You can do so in our live chat room. You can call us at 646-929-2495 and let us know what you would like to hear in the State of the Union speech for 2014. And we'll give you the opportunity to do that for two reasons. First of all, because we believe that your voice is the most important one here, not mine. And as we've already seen, there are people out there who have different views I thank Michael for offering up his views today and giving me the opportunity in unfettered nature to respond to it. I hope he recorded it. I hope he'll listen to it again. We are not broke. That is one of the big three lies that we hear all the time in this nation. However, we need to address the fact that there are so many things that we need to accomplish to recover this economy that virtually the only way we can do that is by the massive creation of meaningful employment. That is the second thing that happened in 1935 to 1940. Not only did we receive Social Security and the idea that every citizen needed a safety net, regardless of their position, that some might use and some might not, but we also got the WPA that went all the way through the military highway program of Dwight Eisenhower that created interstates in this land. It was a massive multi-generational jobs bill, and it put America back to work. Of course, we would find in the ensuing years of the 40s a national requirement for things that we didn't have where we were building cars. Now we needed to build airplanes and tanks and war armaments and bullets and uniforms. But all along the way, infrastructure was part of the program. The WPA, the CCC, and other continuing acts gave us some of our finest institutions, our finest art, our roadside parks, lakes, state parks, our state park system, all at the hands of American citizens who put their hand to the plow, earned a reasonable, respectable salary, able to defend and provide for their families, that brought us out of the Dust Bowl, brought us out of the Depression. We didn't actually clear the Depression until the late 40s, but it was because of those things that they became available. There are not a lot of Americans who were alive in 1930 to remember the condition of our elderly and our infirm, our disabled, who were on the streets, homeless, begging for food in this, the most advanced industrialized nation in the world. We may well go back to being, as we were once known, as a second-rate backwater burg. But if we continue to believe that we're going to dominate the global scale through our economic policies, that's not even conceivable. It cannot happen. I would submit it should not happen. But there are plenty of things going on in America and around the world that we do need to pay attention to. But until we pay attention to the least among us, we have no hope of prosperity in the long term. That's a simple truth. Yes, Jesus said, you will always have the poor among you, but that does not mean that they need to be relegated to that role before they're born. And it does not mean that they have to fulfill that role throughout the completeness of their life. Everybody has the opportunity. You know, this is a nation founded on opportunity. People came from all over the world to have opportunity here. And as we grew in our first century, it became apparent that people were more than willing to spend everything they had to have nothing and to take their last breath of life as long as it was one breath of freedom in the lands of this, on the sands of this nation, because of what we stood for. And I believe that it is still among us our best nature. We just need to reconnect with it. We need to understand that unless we are all doing okay, none of us is doing okay. You know, I heard it said recently in a seminar that if President Lincoln had had a second term, there would have been no need for Martin Luther King, because we would not have had gender inequality or racial inequality in this land. It's an interesting concept to postulate, but the fact is that he was assassinated by a man who disagreed with him. He had henchmen who were hanged for that. He was killed for that. But a nation was affected forever because of that. We're still dealing with it. And it's time for us as citizens to very simply sit still and consider. What do you want to hear from your president? Now, if you go to that site and say that what I want to hear from this president is that he's turning himself in for being, you know, assassinated or exterminated or whatever the Florida Congress critter wants him to do. That's not going to happen, okay? It's not cool to suggest that the American president be assassinated. It's not cool to suggest that the American president should lay down his arms, raise his hands, and come out of the Capitol and surrender. Who do you think you are? It's not cool to suggest revolution as an armed rebellion against the current administration, or any administration for that matter. Didn't work out too well the last time. It will work out much less well this time. Let's not go there. Let's not become that nation. In Exodus, we're exhorted to sit down and reason together. Sounds like a pretty good plan to me. We're going to hear from a president that's been basically under assault since before he was inaugurated. I think that fundamental fair play should come into play at some point, and let's realize that that's really just not fair. We expect this president to lead this nation, whether we agree with him or not, that it will take us forward, and it is in our best interest to make sure that happens. We're doing it with this president until 2017. So let's at least work together to get those programs, policies, and procedures that we believe in to the fore. Let's remove money from politics. Let's just decide that you're either going to be a representative of the people that elected you, your electors, or you're going to be charged with bribery. We're going to remove the Tea Party because they are antithetical to a democracy. We will not support them. I'd love to have their ideas at a table of common dialogue, but they can't do it. They're not willing to do it. That's why this president will not meet with them. After 3 years of trying, he finally said, okay, fine, I believe you. You're not going to talk to me. I'll have to do it myself, so I'll do it myself. And he's calling upon the American people to be his enforcers. If you want change, what are you willing to do to make that change happen where you live? We've got an entire project going on between three radio networks that will allow 200,000 people to become involved immediately. Write me at tnprogressive@netrootsradio.com and say, I want to know what this project is. Put progressive voice in your subject line. We'll respond to you and show you where this site is. And there are many people working on it. Some of the leading thought leaders in this country are working on this project. We want your voice. We want your participation. We want you to be able to say, I will work within 12 blocks of where I live for the things that I believe in. That's what these 200,000 people are being asked to commit to do right now, before the election of 2014, so that they can impact the election of 2014 by getting people into office at the courthouse and the state house and the Congress who are willing to be responsive to the people who send them there, that they understand that it's not their political ideology that was voted in, that we need to remove the influence of nefarious activities such as ALEC and the SNPs and the SPNs, I'm sorry, and Donors USA and others who believe that they can purchase this government and own this land. So if you have that thought in your head, you need to understand as citizen, it's antithetical to who we are as a people. And to the Koch brothers and to those who follow them, no. You may not purchase this land. You may not remove our documents that have made this nation what it is. You may not institute corporatist plutocratic theocracy or oligarchy for your own purposes. No. If you want to start a war, let's at least be honest about it. Let's be honest about what it is you intend to be the outcome. You can't do that. You keep hiding behind every possible source. I disagree with your notions, but I also disagree with your tactics. If you want to do something, why don't you stand up in the public square and say so? You can't get a spokesman that gets it right, because if it's Rand Paul, he's dumping you the first shot out of the bag. I mean, he starts out by saying he disagrees with you. You want to be Ted Cruz? Ted Cruz is a Dominionist. He has no interest in the libertarian ideology. And he's got a lot of problems right now because there's a really big question about his citizenship. If you're going to have a national thought leader on the stage, you need to know that they're available to do the job that you want them to do. Ted Cruz wants to renounce his Canadian citizenship. There's a problem with that. He can't. If he does, he automatically reverts to his Cuban citizenship. He has no American citizenship. Same is the problem with Senator Mark Rubio, who can't seem to get a handle on where it is that he's born or who it is that he has citizenship with. Rush Limbaugh can't figure out which way's up and which way's down, and he's losing 90% of his population as we speak because of his insanity. Hannity can't say two words without getting one of them wrong. There's no thought leader on the Fox News channel except the talking heads who seem to just be trashing everything that's not ultra-conservative. That includes the libertarian view. The most likely libertarian voice is on MSNBC, 6 o'clock in the morning. His name's Joe Scarborough. He can't even get it right. So, Mr. Koch, if you really believe that you have the right to own this land, why don't you stand out on a public stump, a podium of the people, and say so? If you believe that it's so wrong in this land, why don't you say so? You don't need to go to Red State or to Fox News or to MSNBC. Come here, 2 hours to say so. That's not a problem. But to hide behind, to work at the underpinnings of our democracy and those rules of law, which we have decided from our beginning were going to be inviolable for your own entertainment? No. I will speak against it to my last breath. It is of the people, by the people. We are the people. It's for the people. It's not for the few. It's for the many. It always has been. And if you believe that this country has forever been run by corporatists, let's change that. Let's do it legally through the ballot box. Let's make a representation of this country that everybody can recognize and decide, I don't want to be a part of it. Fine, bye. Don't let it hit you or the good Lord split you. You don't want to pay your taxes? Fine, bye. See ya after you get out of jail. You know, if I remember once the IRS believed I owed them $119, and you would not believe the 3 years worth of hell I took until I could physically prove to them beyond any successful doubt that I did not, in fact, owe them $119. How is it that we can have $13.6 trillion hiding in offshore accounts by corporations domiciled in this nation, yet nothing happens? You want to talk about welfare? Let's talk about corporate welfare. I'll be willing to talk about handling entitlements when you get over the loopholes. You close the loopholes, we'll talk about entitlements, and we'll talk about, you know, how these terrible things are draining the wealth of our nation. I want to hear it. There's no such thing as an entitlement as the term you use, but let's talk about it. I'm telling you what I believe. This is my opinion, big box, my opinion. But I can explain what's happened to you. I can explain what's going on now, and I can tell you what's going to happen if we continue the course. And I don't have to be a sight. I don't have to be a sage or a seer or a magician or, you know, anything like that. I can tell you from very easily retainable historical data what this country faces. I'm on these airwaves because of my concern. We're not acting much like the people we're supposed to be. We're hurting each other. we're creating such desperation and such fatality that we're killing each other. We need not do that. There are ways to fix that. We should be doing them. So you have the link to the White House site where you can potentially impact the very speech itself. I'll give it to you one more time. I'll give it to our producer, Progressive Patty, and she will put it in the link, I hope, in the chat room. Feel free to use it. And don't sit around saying, well, that was a bunch of nothing. I didn't get nothing out of what he said. In fact, if that's the way you feel about it, I wish you'd call me and tell me. Because I'm not getting a lot of input. I don't know whether or not you're hearing what I'm saying or whether I need to be saying something else or just sitting here whistling in the studio. I'm here every Sunday. I'm replayed every Thursday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So the challenge is yours, you know. I don't need you to call me and tell me. I just need you to do it. I don't want you to call me and tell me about how, you know, you think it's right or how you think it's wrong until you tell me what you're doing about it. So now this show's not for me. I could be doing a lot of other things and having a lot different life than the 9 hours a week that I'm talking to you, but I choose to talk to you for 9 hours a week because I believe that it matters. I believe there needs to be a place for you to have a voice, and I'd like you to use it. I'd like to use it while it's still available to you because one of the things that needs to disappear if these guys are to have their way is open thought. You need to understand that. I see a lot of this hatred about the Jews and the bankers and the ugly people and the disaffected and the malnourished and the mentally challenged being the problems of our nation that need to be eliminated. And I go back to a country that was in a lot worse shape than ours in 1929 that had 50% unemployment and a crushing economic reality where you couldn't buy a loaf of bread for more than 160 billion marks. Now, the biggest value of the money they had during those days was lining their heaters with it so that they could burn the money for fuel so that they could stay warm. The hatred that was spread throughout a continent became a poison to the world. And unfortunately, the poison still exists. For exactly the same reason. It is to incite anger and hatred. That's all it's for. The only difference is we're in the 21st century. We have instantaneous recognition. And we can deal with you the second you show your ugly head. As you go about your week this week, I'd like you to seriously consider that you are the person responsible for what good things can happen in this country. I'd like you to look at it apart from a political issue as a moral issue, personal moral issue. I work a lot on that, moral philosophy and political morality. You know, up until Adam Smith, it was not known as politics or economics. It was known as political economy. They were so closely tied together in this country that they couldn't be separated. But look at what Adam Smith wrote and ask yourself, what is the moral thing to do? Put that in view of your citizenship. As a citizen, what is my moral duty? Next week we'll review the State of the Union speech, and then we'll move on to the next battlefield in the war on the poor. And ask yourself personally how that morally lines up with what you believe to be true. Coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, for the past 2 1/2 hours, I have been the Tennessee Progressive. I'd like you to go out and do something about it this week, okay? And don't forget to be nice to each other. We'll see you next Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central Time, right here on Coffee Party Radio. Bye-bye for now.